In the world of manufacturing, change is the only constant. How are small and medium-sized manufacturers, SMMs, to keep up with new technologies, regulations, and other important shifts, let alone leverage them to become leaders in their industries? Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC, highlights leaders from the modern world of manufacturing, from SMMs to consultants to industry experts. Each quarter, we go deep into topics pertinent to both operating a manufacturing firm and the industry as a whole. Join us to hear about the manufacturing sector's latest trends, groundbreaking technologies, and expert insights to help SMMs in California set themselves apart in this exciting modern world of innovation and change. I'm Greg Profasich, Director of Advanced Manufacturing Technologies at CMTC, and I'd like to welcome you. In this episode, I'm joined by three executives from Mizuho OSI, Steve Lamb, Kevin Thorne, and Bill Breger, as well as Denise Shields, principal of the Shields Resource Group. Steve, Kevin, Bill, and Denise explain the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award and the MBNQA framework. The group then discusses Mizuho's continuous improvement journey using the Baldrige criteria, covering why they were interested in applying the criteria in the first place, what the process looked like, and the value the criteria has provided them. Welcome, Kevin. It's great to have you here today.
Hey, Greg. It's great to be here. So I'm Kevin Thorne. I'm the VP of Operations and Service at Mizuho OSI. I've been with the company for about 7 years. Together with Bill and Steve, you'll hear from shortly, we've been on the Baldrige journey to try to make Mizuho OSI the best place to work.
Sounds like an interesting conversation we're about to have. Thank you so much. Steve, it's appreciate you being here today as well.
Greg, I'm happy to be here as well. This has been a very interesting journey, and we're continuing on this journey for sure. I am president and COO of Mizuho OSI. I've only been here 44 years now. I have started, helped found the company way back when, and been through different variations of the company, worn all the hats, and now trying to keep the ship going in the right direction.
Sounds like there's going to be a lot of good detail we can share, so I'm looking forward to that. Welcome, Bill. Happy to have you join us today as well.
Hi, Greg. My name's Bill Breger. I'm the Director of Service here at Mizuho OSI. I've been here 8 years. Kevin and I was at a company, ADAC Laboratories, that won the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award in 1996. And I have spent most of my career implementing that type of process to make companies better.
Well, thank you, Bill. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Welcome, Denise. It's great to have you here as well.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be back with you guys. I'm Denise Shields, and I'm chairman of the board of the wonderful organization called the California Council for Excellence. And we are the official Baldrige program here in California. And we welcome Mizuho as one of our most recent award recipients. And we're looking forward to celebrating their big win at our conference in Sacramento in May. And in the meantime, we want to share their story with all of you here today because it's a great one to share.
Thank you, Denise. It's great to have you here. And thank you all. I'm excited about our conversation today, and I'm looking forward to hearing about your perspectives and your insights. So let's get started. We're here to talk about the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award. Now, our regular listeners know that we discussed Baldrige once before on Shifting Gears, back in Season 5, Episode 3, where I spoke with David Spong, formerly of Boeing, and with Denise from the California Council of Excellence. But Boeing's experience was something of a big company perspective. Today, we're going to get the small and medium-sized company perspective. So before we get into the details of your experience within companies you've worked with, let's get some context for our listeners. What is the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award and the MBQNA framework?
Greg, thanks for asking. You know, like Bill said in his intro, you know, he and I worked at a company that applied for the award and, you know, after a couple of attempts, you know, eventually won the national level. And what we learned in that journey is a framework for, you know, running and managing a business that ties everything together, and it shows the interconnectedness of a system of business that, you know, everybody has. And I think what many companies struggle to do is figuring out a way to connect all of these seemingly disparate organizations in a company and put them together into one, you know, system that's operating and feeding off of each other, you know, in kind of a synchronistic way. I mean, it really does create that framework for connecting the business and providing context to all of the departments so that the entire company is moving forward to achieve those goals and objectives that are most important to that company. We found it to be very powerful the first time we went through it, and both Bill and I have used it at other companies we've gone to, you know, help those companies be better. And now that we're here at OSI, we're doing the same thing. We're taking that criteria and trying to make the company a better place.
Okay. Bill, something to add?
Yes, Kevin, if I could, when I got here about 8 years ago, in terms of improving business performance excellence, one of the presentations I gave Steve Lamb challenged me and the company, what is the standard for business performance excellence? So all you have to do is Google and research this, and the Baldrige criteria comes up as the standard. The framework comes back as a standard for business excellence. And I presented that to Steve and the company. And just those categories, you think about them as the right way to run and manage a company and set up your processes.
And Greg, maybe one more thing to add. Bill's here shortly before I was. And then, you know, I got here and I was working with Bill on what we used to call the Business Excellence Initiative. And to Bill's point, you know, we had to find a standard. What is excellent? And, you know, he and I had both been in the process before, and we naturally gravitated toward the Malcolm Baldrige criteria. But I think, you know, just like you're having us here talk about our experience as a small to mid-sized company, you know, when Bill and I presented it to my colleagues on the executive staff, you know, Steve included, it was a little bit of, hey, that's kind of a big company program and we may not have the resources for it. And that could be very challenging for us, you know, to embark on. And so, you know, so Steve, I'm putting some words in your mouth that I'm sure you can kind of respond to. But there was some apprehension in the beginning about, you know, how difficult this might be. But I think since we have, you know, gone down this journey and learned, you know, what it takes to do it and how this isn't really anything on top of what you do, it really is adding context and structure to what we need to do anyhow. And so the company had a few people in the beginning that may not have been completely aligned with the vision. But I think since then, you know, and Steve's been one of the biggest champions of this thing in the company, you know, now from the leadership level down on down, you know, we're promoting it because we see the value it brings to the company. It makes sense. It's good for the business.
I would echo what both Kevin and Bill said there. When we started down this journey, there were the naysayers, if you will. There were folks that looked at it and they said, boy, we're so busy. How can we now layer on this thing just so we can win an award? Early on, it was clear to me anyway that we had to kind of approach this not from the perspective of the prize being a trophy or an award, but a prize being the improvement of the company. You know, since the inception of this company anyway, we started as a small entrepreneurial company, you know, doing all things for all people, and then defined our niche and grew from there. But that culture is always, the successful ones, I believe, are cultures of continuous improvement, always looking to make things better. And we saw early on how this would help us. It was help us grow, help us be more profitable, and, you know, do more with less, for lack of a better term. And so that was the main appeal to me. When I got educated more on the Baldrige criteria, primarily from my experts, Bill and Kevin, who've done an excellent job, I saw that it was a very clear, logical roadmap that helped us guide our action and give us the confidence that we wouldn't overlook things as we go. And as Kevin said earlier, it became a structured way for us to do what we already do, but do it better. That was the primary appeal for me. And I think it's played out in that way so far. And I think winning the award we just won in the state on the first go around, I think it's pretty impressive. So really enthusiastic about this program going forward.
Impressive indeed. So congratulations on that.
If I could interject, I just want to echo what you just said. It is really impressive. And you know what the process includes is outside board of examiners. They come in knowing nothing about your organization and validating the application process, right? So when you win, it's because you clearly deserve it, because these people are unbiased. They have to sign conflicts of interest statements saying they know nothing about your company. They're not consultants working for you. They're outside examiners. There's no conflicts of interest. And so it's truly an outside shout out to you guys from the highest business standard in the country, which is the Baldrige criteria, that you guys are on the right roadmap for continuous improvement and performance excellence. So kudos to all of you for this great accomplishment.
All the more impressive when you think about the fact that, you know, it's your first go around. So Steve, if I heard you correctly, this is your first time through the Baldrige framework, correct?
That's correct. I was aware of it certainly, but never went through the steps formally.
Okay. And then Kevin and Bill, you guys, it's not your first time. You've been through it a couple of times. How many times have you used the framework at how many different companies?
Well, for me, certainly winning the award at ADAC Laboratories was one. And I did some consulting where I certainly brought the category, the framework into play. And it's a journey. It's not a one and done event. And I moved on from some of those companies, but have always endorsed those.
Greg, I think it's one of those things where this is only the second company in which I formally applied. We did it at ADAC first and then, you know, here at OSI. I think what happens, though, once you go through it, it's like, you know, now that you've seen a better way of doing it, you can't unsee it. And I think you take those principles with you, you know, throughout your career. You may not take the whole criteria and formally apply, but, you know, measurement by fact, continuous improvement, you know, looking at effectiveness and efficiency, those kinds of things are principles that become, you know, just basic pillars of running a business that I think once you go down this journey, you're changed forever.
Right. Okay. And so I heard you talking a little earlier, and I wanted to kind of key back on something I heard you talking about with, you know, the standard for business excellence and the framework and kind of the question set that, you know, is broadly applicable. Those kind of things that you're mentioning. Is that what attracted you to Baldrige in the first place for each of you guys on your individual journeys? Or was there something else?
Well, I mean, at you know, when we first started this at ADAC, and Bill, you were there before I was, so you can talk to some of the original history, but you know, ADEC was a scrappy competitive company. We wanted to be the best in the industry, and we were looking for some kind of a cookbook that would help us to be the best in the industry. And the Baldrige criteria was kind of new then. I mean, it wasn't completely new, but it was, you know, still a little bit new. That's what we just embarked on and said, you know, hell, we're going to do this.
Well, Kevin, in my opinion at ADEC Labs, they really did the homework and saw the advantages of winning the Baldrige Award and what it can do to your business, given the improvements that are made going through this process. And I think the CEO at that time was very aggressive at being the best of the best in the industry and winning that Baldrige Award and getting that logo and leveraging that certainly had the impact on ADAC Labs that he thought it was going to have and really went after it. Now, there's serious advantages to this, as both you and Steve have mentioned, just the journey and what that brings to your processes and improvements. If you never won the award, never applied for the award, applying this and showing the improvements is well worth it. But ADAC really went after it aggressively for the logo, I believe, as well.
And I think that's a conversation we had with Denise and David Spong back a couple seasons ago, right? It's not so much about the award. It's the process and the business improvements that happen on your way to meeting the criteria that, by the way, if you meet all the criteria, you can get the award, right? So Denise, anything to add to that?
The Baldrige office is run by the Department of Commerce. And when the award was first announced, it was called the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award. And all of the operations was under the same name. And several years ago, they had an aha moment and realized you don't even have to apply for the award. You can use a criteria just to be excellent. So they actually changed formally the name of the program to now what is called the Baldrige Performance Excellence Program. And if you want to apply for the award, you can. You know, you can be a great swimmer, but that doesn't mean you have to go to the Olympics, right? So it's really a choice for organizations. The advantage of applying for the award is what these guys did, which is apply through an application process and conduct a site visit and get these outside voices that verify your strengths and your opportunities for improvement and ultimately give you the award. But as Bill and others have said, it's really not about the award. It's about achieving performance excellence, whether it's, you know, on time quality, you know, defect control. There's lots of different things that come out of the Baldrige process that improves your business, but it's not about the award. It's definitely about continuous improvement for your bottom line. And I don't mean financially, but your other operational statistics as well.
What I've learned from Bill and Kevin, for that matter, is that the output is better results. It's not the award. It's doing the right things in the right order in a manner that creates results. And quite frankly, that's kind of how we're using that concept to get people involved, to keep people involved. One might think we were crazy for embarking on this journey in the middle of a pandemic, but we did. And, you know, without everybody in the building every day, some of it was challenging, but we made it work. Getting that involvement was key, and reminding them we weren't looking for a trophy, but we were trying to get better. And they could see as we went down the path that it made sense, number one. It did tie things together in a way they may not have thought about before. And it really did put structure to the things that they did every day. Without being able to demonstrate those values, I think it would have just been so much window dressing. But that's not at all what it's turned out to be here. And as I said, we're still on the journey, so we got a lot more work to do.
So Denise, I'll add one thing. One of the key phrases I first heard way back in 1992, 1993 with this was a systematic approach to continuous improvement. It really took me a while to let that sink in. It has a life of its own. And through the Baldrige criteria, it really exhibits that. But there really is a systematic approach to this.
Absolutely. Thank you for recognizing that.
So Steve, one of the things I wanted to ask, you know, you've been through the journey now, and it's still relatively fresh because it's your first time through it. What were the things you found most illuminating as you applied the criteria to your business?
Well, I touched on it a little bit before. It really helped show us how all these business processes are interlinked. They're interlinked and dependent upon each other. I think it helped our employees see that as well, to see that they don't just show up and do an independent job, but what they do every day affects what everybody else does. And if we're all moving in the same direction with the same goal in mind, we reach that result sooner. So, you know, again, that's been very, very, very powerful. This whole notion of applying learnings to consciously make gradual improvements is really powerful. Nothing happens overnight. We didn't expect anything to happen overnight. And we made sure everybody understood that. So the little wins are huge to keep people involved. To have people understand how the criteria shows them how all things are linked was really, really important.
So the criteria made the interconnections between people's roles and the activities they were doing in various departments more obvious and more visible.
Absolutely. I believe so. I guess with anybody, as they go down this journey, they start with the categories, right? And the last one is, what is it, Bill? Results, right? So people didn't start with the results, and we didn't press for that, right? But as we got them interested, we kept direct and kept pointing to that. And Bill's a master at this, right? Of just working in and saying, look at this. This is where we're going. This is where we're headed. And that results thing is what this is all about. We don't get results. We are just spinning our wheels and having fun.
Mm-hmm. So a question broadly for the three of you, and you can take turns answering, but you know, what's been your approach in how to implement the Baldrige framework? Was it bottoms up? Was it top down? Was it a combination of both? How did you kind of approach that? You know, if I'm an SMM thinking about this, listening to three of your guys' experience, what advice would you have for, you know, how to approach that?
Well, I'll answer first, and then these guys, I'm sure, have their opinions. It was definitely an approach from both for us. Started with a kind of a tops down. I set the stage along with Bill and Kevin's help by explaining the purpose of this journey. And then it wasn't just another layered on activity. It wasn't the business process du jour, right? That everybody had to, you know, read a book and flavor of the month, read a book and do better. It wasn't that at all. And as I mentioned earlier, we weren't looking to win the trophy. That was not our target, but instead creating the structured approach to make the company better. And so from the top, that's where we started. But I think with Bill and Kevin's help, they also rallied the troops from the bottom and got them interested in a variety of ways. And I'll let them talk about that.
Bill, you can expand on this, but I think one of the things we learned the first time we did this was the 2-6-2 rule. So 20% of the people in an organization are going to gravitate to this and think it's the greatest thing in the world. 20% of the people are going to actively resist you in every way possible that they can. And then the 60% of the organization is kind of in the middle waiting to see who's going to win that tug of war, right? It did start as a tops down, you know, at the director level, VP level, you know, with Bill and I and Steve and the rest of the executive staff, too. I mean, you know, most everybody got on board with this thing pretty quickly because you spend a little bit of time with it. And, you know, the evidence is just overwhelming, you know, the benefit this can have to the company. You know, so our approach was to take these people that were enthusiastic and quickly put them on teams and sign them up to be engaged with, you know, the senior leadership to work through these categories. And then their enthusiasm spread out into the, you know, 60% that were on the fence, you know, and we were able to convert, you know, many, if not most of the naysayers onto the program because they see, you know, just really what it does for the company. When we wrote for the prospector, when we wrote that first application that kind of defined our company, we circulated it with the leadership of the company, you know, I think Steve, you can talk to this more too, but everybody's like, wow, this really describes our company. This is what we're all about. This is something we should use as a recruiting tool. I mean, this is good stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, once you got to that point and then, you know, the fire was lit and I think we've got most everybody on board and we're going to continue.
I think that's a really good point. As we went through the application process and, you know, there was challenges for sure and timing issues. And if the application didn't have a time frame, we'd probably still be working on it, right? But it makes you get up and move quicker. But people that did get involved, that did see it, could really see the value in it. they were able to recruit the others, and that was all important. And by the end of the day, the teams that we formed, they weren't running real smooth in the beginning, but at the end of the day, they really came together. It was fun to watch.
I would just add that I think it is a top-down program. If service is the only department that's going to leverage the Baldrige criteria, and I try to present that, the 262 rule that Kevin said would say, well, that service, it's applicable to them. It's not applicable to engineering or manufacturing or marketing. It just wouldn't be the same. And I think that Prospector Award, getting the energized people involved in that, understanding the questions and thinking about, gee, how do we do that? How do we answer that? What is our process? And gee, what results do we have to show for what we've done there? Really got them even more energized than they were before. And eventually, that's why as a journey, it picks up speed as it goes along. But I think most companies, when it's first started, are going to say, geez, I can barely get through the day as it is. How does this layer on? And like Kevin said, this doesn't layer on. This is how you do your work. And I think Steve has really drove the point. This is not about the trophy. Whether we ever apply for that trophy or not, this is all about the processes, leveraging our customers, how we can exceed their needs more on every front is the right approach to improving the business. And I think we're seeing results of that. And I'm certainly energized to continue to see the improvements.
One of the things that helped us get people involved and enthused about it is once we started to get this stuff down on paper, it clearly described our company. And a lot of people sat back and said, wow, we do a lot of great stuff. You know, then you start benchmarking and say, well, not too many companies do it as well as we do. And then the momentum starts growing because, you know, they take pride in what they're doing and they say, hey, there's the there. This stuff is real. And by the way, this isn't a whole new program we got to learn. This is something we're doing already. That was huge, I think, in getting people on board.
So it sounds like that was one of the aha moments, if you will, that this is not really something new. It's not a new layer. It's just doing what we're doing better and all the things we're already doing. Were there other aha moments that came along through applying the criteria?
Yeah, Greg, I wanted to touch on that, right? So one of the things that I think, you know, Bill and I learned as we went through training to more in-depth training on the criteria. And, you know, I actually trained to be an examiner and, you know, did one site visit. For people that are embarking on this journey, don't underestimate, and you will underestimate, but try not to underestimate the importance of the organizational profile. That doc, 5 pages up front, force you as a company to write down what you say is important. What happens is, you know, the executives get around and they say a whole bunch of things are important. And then you go through the application, but you're not spending as much time on those things that you say are important as you have in your organizational profile. So it's kind of this accountability check because there may be a lot of things that you think are important and you want to be important, but there are not a lot of things that you're spending on time to prove that they're important. And that's, you know, just so powerful to us as an executive team because, you know, we had to sit down and come to grips with what is important and to put it in there and then to make sure that every aspect of our business is aligned with and supporting what's important. It's one of the most powerful alignment tools that I think that the criteria brings to a company, that organizational profile.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, Kevin. We won that Baldrige Award in 96 at ADAC, and I've spoken to this most of my career, and I did not realize until last year when I went through that training how important that profile is. And if you don't spend enough time on that and you don't understand your profile, it's more than just an organizational chart and how many divisions you've got in that. If you don't really spend time on that profile, it sets up the 6 categories, and without, there's some real disconnects there.
Okay. So you guys have mentioned a bunch of times now as we've been talking through things, the results you've gotten. The results come at the end, but you started to show up when you started to follow the process and apply the criteria. Can you talk a little bit in some general terms about what some of the results you've seen both here at Mizuho as well as at ADAC have been?
At the highest level, you know, revenue growth, profitability, customer satisfaction, efficiency in the factory. We've gone lean and we can measure that many different ways. But even with those high level metrics I'm going through right now, and we've tried to define our key work processes and our key support processes. And with those, what's the elevator pitch for that process? And what are the key performance indicator metrics that would validate that process. And I think what you have to be very careful of, you can end up with 1,000 metrics that really don't get you to the gist of that process. And I think you need to spend time there in defining those work and support processes and what are the key, not just metrics, the key performance indicators for those metrics, and then trending those. I always say, you know, we do a quarterly business review and we review a lot of metrics in the company. And I'm always asking, are you improving, treading water, I call it, or getting worse? If you're not improving, even if you're just flat, you need to understand that. Now, if it's customer sat and you're getting 99.5 out of 100 and you are the benchmark and the other benchmarks out there are at 82.5, it's okay to be flat. Then you'd want to watch to make sure you don't drop something. But then there's other metrics out there that if you look at the benchmark, hey, we really got some runway in front of us here. And then if you can get some conversations going through some contacts to find out how they're doing, what they're doing is even better. You can leverage that and move things a lot faster.
You know, I think this whole notion of metrics is a huge one. And it comes out of people really looking deeply into the processes and what they're trying to accomplish. You know, we have a lot of very talented people here, and they all have great ideas and great motivations and, you know, want to do the right thing. But until you start looking at the metrics, not the worthless many, which is a term I learned from Bill, but the real important few, you use metrics to really see what you're doing, to prove those results of what you're accomplishing. Until you do that, you know, it's just a lot of fun talk. We have taken that to a level of sophistication here in our quarterly review process that Bill mentioned. We call it the DASH process. It's a very formal process. We get together once a quarter and we look at our overall business objectives, and they're assigned to an owner and they have a team behind them. And they report out every quarter, you know, what did you say you're going to do? What did you do? And what are you going to do next quarter, right? And it's just kind of a rolling look at the business. And we use real metrics that are meaningful. And we challenge each other. And if we can't see how useful that metric is, we change it or we talk about it. But one of the things that I think is a kind of a high-level result here is we've been undergoing this DASH process for many years now. It's evolving and maturing every year. But now, when people make presentations in DASH, they are using Baldrige terminology. They are using the words that mean something very specific in Baldrige, and it takes the level of communication way up. So it's not just someone trying to describe what they're doing, but someone using very specific language that the whole room now understands. That's a really powerful result in my book.
So we've been discussing results at a high level and the impacts on the business from, you know, revenue growth to profitability, efficiency, et cetera. Process changes, I'm imagining, are some of the things that have driven that. So let's talk a little bit about some specifics on process changes that you've made as a result of applying the Baldrige criteria, and then some examples of the actual, you know, ranges of improvement and the results that you've been able to get.
It's a great question, because when we embarked on this journey, well, even before that, we didn't have a compelling reason to change. I mean, Steve managing the company has this chart that goes back before the beginning of time, and we've been growing at about 7.25% year over year, and we just do that on and on. And, you know, our profitability grows, our revenue grows, and the company is just on a very stable, steady path forward. And when you look at those numbers, why would you want to do anything different? I mean, other companies would give their eye teeth for this. And also, we're private, so we don't have this, you know, outside investors putting influence on us to, you know, have to generate specific results quarter over quarter. But we have this notion in the back of our mind, the company has quite a few engineers in it. You know, we are a technology and innovation company, and so we want to innovate. And that's just, you know, we say it's in our DNA, and that's, you know, product innovation, but it's also process innovation. And so one of the, you know, the things that the criteria caused us to do is to answer some difficult questions. Leadership and governance. Well, because we're a private company, we don't have governance. So how do we ensure that we're managing the company with, you know, integrity and high sense of ethics? Well, because that's what we want to do. But then how do you know? And it causes us to ask ourselves these challenging questions about, well, what are our processes to make sure that this happens? And if we don't have them, is it important for us to have? You know, a couple of areas that come to mind in terms of things that I think very specifically changed for us. What are your key processes? You know, your work process. We had to define those. So if we say sales is a key work process, well, What are the requirements of sales? Well, maybe it's more than that, right? And as the team evaluated what their core requirements were, they came up, well, it really is about managing relationships. Well, how do you know if your relationships are getting better or worse? How do you measure that? It's changed the language that we have as a company in terms of what is a process? How do you know if the process is working? You know, what are the core requirements? How do we know if we're getting better over time? You know, we've made some significant strides in strategy, right? We've incorporated the criteria and how we manage the strategic development of the company, which, you know, if you can't get your strategy right, then your future is a bit bleak, I would think. And then also around knowledge management. I mean, how do you go and take this body of information that the organization has accumulated over the years and ensure that that survives and it's available for people, you know, who come, you know, in the next wave of people that want to propel this company forward? I mean, and those are a couple of areas that we, you know, made some, I think, pretty significant changes to key processes to make the company better. I mean, I'll just give you one example. You know, in our strategic planning, you know, we've come up with these things called strategic action plans, and kind of as a response to the Baldrige criteria. What are your strategic advantages? What are your challenges? You know, what are your objectives? And, you know, how are you going to blend all this together in an action plan to get you there? And so we kind of formalized the process around that language. And, you know, one of the things, you know, that we noticed is that we measured our market dominance in terms of units sold. We don't have a lot of significant competitors out there. So, you know, when you're running around with an 85% market share, it's kind of hard to understand, you know, who are you going to go compete against and what are you going to do next? So we changed the way we look at our business. Instead of units sold, we started to look at procedures that we serve. And we didn't have the same kind of market penetration with that, you know, something much less than that. So, well, why not? Highlighting all new areas for us to take and focus the business on because of the way we, you know, chose to think about our market share and our strategy differently than we had in the past. And a lot of that, you know, is attributable to Baldrige asking these difficult questions about how do you do something and then analyzing that and then making that process better.
Got it. Okay. Bill, Steve, anything to add to that?
From a service perspective, focusing on customers, I'm responsible for the service organization. So when a piece of equipment has a problem, they call into tech support and they help analyze what potentially is wrong. We dispatch an engineer. We get the parts out there. He gets it fixed and it comes back. So what are the key components to really understanding how good you're doing at service? Well, one is you have to survey and you should have to leverage a third party, independent, totally neutral survey company. It can't be self-serving. I can't pick and choose who I want to survey and throw out the bad scores and keep the good ones. We've done this through a national program and did some benchmarking on 10 questions that we ask around the service process, as well as overall service. And it comes down to service cycle time, first time fix rate, and overall customer satisfaction. Those are probably the top three components. How are you doing in benchmarking against those? So customer satisfaction kind of aggregates those. But to deliver world-class service, you got to have people, service engineers, that are adequately trained, that know these products inside and out, and that they've got the spares to fix it when they get there. And do they fix it the first time they're there? We've invested in trunk stock and we've really analyzed our data to know what is potentially going to fail every day, every week, every month, every quarter. We've got spares on the shelf. And I set a mantra here. Don't ever, 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 ever miss a shipment that a customer or service engineer needs. And we've gotten that. We've reduced that from almost 40% missed shipments 8 years ago down to 2%, 1% now through improving those processes. And the customers have bore that out. We're selling more tables. I know because of it. I've always said sales sells the first table, service sells the rest of them. Because if you buy it, you can't fix it. It doesn't help the patients. It doesn't help the doctors. What did they really invest in? So I could probably spend a couple hours talking about the service side of this, but it's a very important component of this business.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's an impressive improvement over the 8 years, from 40%-ish down to 1% or 2%. It speaks volumes to the quality of the work being done within the Rogers criteria.
And Greg, I'll just jump in to say that is true for every industry that uses the Baldrige. If it's in healthcare, I've got a client that's a hospital right now. Then think about this. They've improved their accuracy in the ER, the emergency room, accuracy used to be 60% for triage. That's pretty scary when you think about it. But that's the nation's average for accuracy in triage in hospitals. You guys know that because you work with doctors, right? Your surgical tables. But they've improved it to 90% because of the Baldrige criteria. There's schools out there that have improved their graduation rates, reducing high school dropouts. I mean, I could go on and on and on. And so I really applaud that you guys are using the Baldrige to improve your results, because that's what the Baldrige was intended to do, is improve results for manufacturing, service, healthcare, education, every sector of American business, so that America is a great place and a competitive in the international marketplace as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Denise. I think those are important points as well. And it doesn't just apply to manufacturing, but of course, that is our focus here today. So, but thank you for bringing to our audience the broader concepts. I also want to go a little broader. And it occurs to me that everything we've been talking about is within your four walls. Are there opportunities or have you applied kind of Baldrige criteria to your suppliers or to your customers in any way? Has the Baldrige kind of leaked outside of your four walls of your company because of the results, because of the impact it's had?
It has a little bit. One of the things we have, whether it's a blessing or a curse, depends upon your perspective. But, you know, we're a regulated company, so we're held to the standards of, you know, ISO 13485 and the Federal Code of Regulations 21 CFR 820. So, you know, these regulations kind of set the tone for, you know, our regulatory landscape as a business, and those trickle down to our suppliers, right? And so suppliers that seek and get, you know, ISO certification have an easier road to being a supplier with us. You know, we're still kind of new to our journey, but, you know, suppliers that would also be going down the Baldrige journey would have an easier road to get qualified and be a member of our team because they've demonstrated a commitment to a business ethos that we see making a substantial difference in the way we manage our business. So any supplier that would want to go down that path, you know, we can see the value in what they're doing, and you could kind of, you know, well, I mean, what do you want in your supply base, right? You want dependability, repeatability, and you'd like to get it, you know, for the lowest price possible. But, you know, as we're learning today in the world of supply chain disruptions, I'll spend a little bit more for dependability. And a supplier that uses the Baldrige criteria to manage their business, I believe, would be a more dependable supplier, and they would be somebody I would prefer to do business with in the future.
Got it. Okay. So in a competitive situation then, what a supplier, I think I hear you saying that a supplier using the Baldrige criteria as a performance improvement tool would have a competitive advantage in winning business with you.
Absolutely would. I mean, because they bring an element of business rigor that I know is present, and I don't know that it necessarily would be present in somebody else. I mean, maybe, you know, I have much greater confidence in their ability to say what they do and do what they say than a company that hasn't practiced these principles.
It would demonstrate a systematic approach to continuous improvement that would improve their operation and ours at the same time.
So I think I hear, as I'm listening to you talk about the benefits of a supplier in a competitive situation or a regular supplier being a Baldrige participant in some way, it sounds like it gives more credibility in your guys' mind. Is there a credibility angle, or is there credibility you think that a Baldrige participation? I mean, certainly award gives a certain amount of accolades and notoriety, but within that application, regardless of whether or not you apply for an award, is there a credibility that exists within those organizations?
Well, again, applying for the award is one process of it. I mean, it really is adopting the criteria, right? I think that's the what we're talking about here. And whether you choose to apply or you just choose to adopt the criteria and base your business on performance excellence, that's really the key in my mind. A business that's well-structured, that understands its dependencies, that, you know, is measuring itself. And one of the elements of the criteria is, you know, how do you know that, you know, for current and future threats, how do you take into account, you know, the idea of what could go wrong in the future? I mean, if you're doing those kinds of things, you are going to be better prepared to deal with all of the uncertainties that business brings you every day. I mean, you know, I'm in operations and service, and you talk, you know, Friday at 3:30 is when the world breaks. And so we have to be prepared to deal with the Fridays at 3:30. And it's the kind of the same thing with our customers. I mean, talking about outside the four walls. I mean, right now, the greatest segment of growth in the Baldrige is in healthcare. And that happens to be, you know, our customers. And so our customers get what this criteria is all about. And, you know, we've talked with a few of them that you know, are engaged in this process, and we tell them that we're embarked in this journey, and they get really excited about it because, you know, they're going through it, and they know if we're going through it, it's going to make us a better partner to them because we're speaking the same language. We're focusing on the things that are about improvement and about the future and about transparency and all of these things that create stronger partnerships than ones that are based on, you know, older principles of perhaps, you know, not being transparent and, you know, win-lose negotiations and all of those kinds of things. It makes us a better partner. It makes us think about being stewards in our community. It just makes us better to be part of the ecosystem.
You know, Greg, we've been talking about manufacturing processes and service and all that, but there's also an aspect of this that is about the people within the company. We've got some great people here for sure, but it's really allowed us to take a look at that aspect of what we do, how we treat our people, and really make them kind of the center of our attention, if you will. We have a strategic process that's fairly well defined. It ends up with strategic objectives about growing the business and sell more and all that sort of thing, expanding international. But this past year, we added one that one of our strategic objectives is to make OSI the best place to work. You know, that's something that I think is really hit home with a lot of people. Going through that journey, we've started the development of what we call a people strategy, which really includes, you know, how we treat people and how they feel here. We've implemented a few years now, we've implemented an employee engagement survey. So we actually measure directly, you know, what they think and what they do. And we're using those results to help make those processes better and make their total experience better here. And we're also looking outside, you know, at stewardship of our communities. We've always been fairly active in that. We do food drives at the holidays and Coke drives and that sort of thing. Just recently, we donated 3 operating tables to Ukraine that are now in hospitals in Ukraine. All of that is part of the atmosphere here. And I think it wasn't that Malcolm Baldrige made us do it, but it puts a focus on us. I think that's been very, very helpful.
I think it's a very powerful thing. And it sounds like from the way you guys are talking, it's had a very powerful effect on many different aspects of your business, from the people engagement and the whole top-down and bottom-up that's occurred through the implementation, from the results in different ways that you have been able to change processes and really understand and deeply think about core processes and what they really are and what you're really about and, you know, what are your core strategies and that alignment that comes from having everybody, you know, use their words and scratch your heads and look at each other. That's not what I said. I meant something slightly different, and then get that alignment that works through all that. I think I hear you guys saying that all of that happened. And then, you know, the bottom line results as well, you know, improvements that you're measuring through the metrics and the ongoing improvements that are happening through your dashboard process and your review process and the evolution that you discussed, that the changing of the metrics when things don't apply any longer and the alignment around language that has deep meaning and everybody's talking from the same lexicon and using the same terms in the same way and that clarity that comes from it. So it sounds like there's been a tremendous amount of value you gained from all of that. Just a couple more questions before we wrap up for today. But, you know, if I'm a small or mid-sized manufacturer and I'm contemplating implementing Baldrige, what advice would you give me as I'm just starting out? What are some of the do's and don'ts? And I'd love to hear from all 3 of you on this.
Yeah, well, first thing is get Bill to come lecture because he's very passionate about it. Now, you have to have a champion, right? You have to have to start. And if you don't have one within the company, you know, I recommend you go outside and get some help. But what's been really important here, I believe, and we've said it before, is do not enter this process with your eye on an award, on a trophy. You have to convince everybody that you're doing this for all the right reasons, meaning you're trying to improve the business, make it a stronger business, make it a more profitable business, make it a more solid place for them to work. I can't emphasize that enough. If you want to just win it so that you can put a trophy on the wall, okay, great, because they don't just hand them out. You got to do the work. But to get buy-in at all levels, you got to make sure and let them know what the real goal is, and that is improving the company.
Echoing what Steve said, for sure, right, because it's hard to motivate an organization around winning an award, right? It's much more effective to motivate an organization about, you know, making it a better place. But I think that I would start, to a certain degree, start small, especially for some of the smaller organizations, right? And then, like I said earlier on, knowing what I know now, I mean, one of the probably the best things a small company can do is to, you know, just focus on the org profile. And it forces you to sit down and write what's important to you as a business and to get clarity among that and, you know, with the senior leadership. And that's not an easy thing to do because, you know, many strongly opinionated people who run businesses, you know, have their own ideas about, you know, what's important. And getting an entire team to agree about, you know, what's important can be one of the most powerful things a small startup manufacturing type organization, and probably not startup because they tend to be somewhat focused, but a manufacturing organization, and to get that leadership aligned around what's important, most important to the business, can be one of the single most important things they do. I mean, kind of start small, focus on that. And then if you found that to be powerful, then start to pick a couple categories, right? And just pick something that you think is, you know, an area that needs improvement. If it happens to be strategy or people or measurements, you know, pick one of those and dive deep into that and see what it does for your organization. And I think what you'll see then is this whole body works well together and we'll catch on and it will grow from there because, you know, it's, Denise, you can tell me precisely, but, you know, just the elements, 17 elements, probably on about 19 pages of text. It's not a huge document, but so much is contained in there when you try to read through the nuance of the questions and how interdependent everything is. It can be a huge undertaking, but pick something and dive into it and just get started. And I think the fever will catch on for most people.
Kevin, I agree with you. I also want to just share that the Boulders Performance Excellence Program actually has state-based programs to support those that are just getting started. I mean, we're the ones that have the criteria books. We have training. We have organizational profile over shops and all kinds of different support mechanisms, including application writing, consulting, whatever an organization may need. So I would encourage those that might be interested and don't know how to get started to contact the California Council for Excellence and just start asking questions. And we're here to support you guys. And that's exactly the purpose of our state Baldrige program.
I got just a couple of things to add maybe for someone starting on this journey. I've said it already. It is a top down. I don't think it's a grassroots environment unless you can convince the executives, hey, I'm doing it. Look how I'm improving. Let's take this across the company. It really is a top-down approach. And I get asked all the time, we've talked about it, is it about the trophy? And if you go Google, they show the results of the companies that have won the Baldrige Award, how much they've grown in revenue and profit and market share, all that goes into play. But if you think about it, it wasn't the trophy that did that. It was the improvements, the process improvements over the journey that drove those results. It wasn't the fact that you got the trophy. But I've always said, if you could run a 9-second 100 meter dash and you're in the Olympics, would you turn down the gold medal if you won the Olympics? Probably not. I haven't seen anyone turn down a medal, but it really is about the journey, the criteria. And Kevin has said this, and I've adopted it. Most of the company has. What's the biggest room in the world? The room for improvement. And this is just a criteria to get after that. And don't be overwhelmed, because when you first see all those, there's basic questions, there's multi-layer questions, and you may have standard operating procedures and work instructions. But if you make them think, how would you answer this question? Just watch them think, oh, geez, I never thought about it that way. How would I answer that? And it's just not the way you documented the SOP or the work instruction. You got to think about it. But don't get overwhelmed. It's a journey, and it's well worth the investment. But if you think it's one and done in a year, that's not going to happen.
Got it. Okay. All right. So thank you all for that. It sounds like as you're talking, it's about the questions and the thinking that happens. And I'm sitting here thinking, listening to you, and it strikes me that, you know, you could have a competitor that can buy the exact same equipment you have. They can have the exact same square footage you have, right? They can buy from the same supplier and have the same kind of set of customers that you have. The thing that differentiates you is your people and how they apply their creativity and their talent to solve the problems of your business. And it sounds a lot like the Baldrige criteria is a way to kind of amplify that thinking to really bring it in a structured way to applying it to the operational and to the business problems that you're trying to solve in your market. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, Greg, it is. I mean, the analogy of a cruise ship, you got 8 people rowing. highly trained, super, you know, fit athletes. But there's that coxswain in the back of the boat that's going stroke, and he's calling out the cadence. And without something like that that ties that shell together, they're not going to be effective. And that's kind of what the criteria does. It creates that cadence, that language, that kinds of questions that you have to ask. I mean, you know, an example, Mark's our head of R&D, and he's my partner on the strategy category. And, you know, we're going through our feedback and, you know, they said, well, we're not sure that you answered the question, how do you do something? We're reading through our application. I said, well, we did. He goes, no, we didn't. We said what we do, but we didn't really say, how do we do something? You know, and it was really illuminating because then we had to go back and say, well, okay, if we didn't answer it, how do we do it? It's a little bit by hook or by crook at the time, you know, we got it done, but we didn't have that systematic approach. We didn't have that coxswain giving us that cadence that was, you know, thought out before and part of, you know, an overall approach. And so that's what it brings to, you know, to a company. It brings this unifying concept that gets everybody rowing in the same rhythm.
Okay. Anything else to add, Steve, Bill?
No, I think we've touched on all the bases here, or at least a lot of them. And as I said earlier, we still got a long way to go.
Well, on that note, how far do you see Mizuho OSI going on this Baldrige journey?
All the way to world dominance.
Well, again, the prize is not the trophy, but if someone wanted to set one on my desk, I'd be happy about that. Continuous improvement. You know, when there's nothing left to do to improve anymore, then we're probably done. And I'm sure we'll win an award if we get to that point. So it's a journey for sure.
Greg, just to add to that, right? One of the things that has kind of crept up into our language. I mean, before we started this journey, you know, like Steve said, we have really great people that work here and the company has had really great results. And so what we had in the past was a lot of really smart people, you know, doing really good things that generated great results. And what we're trying to change to is, you know, keeping those really great and really smart people, but now supporting them with really great process that yield now and into the future consistently great results. You know, because we're growing. You know, and we're breaking that threshold where just because I know what to do and I know, you know, Bill and he knows what to do and together we're going to get it done. We're getting to that size where, you know, process becomes more important than sometimes the people because I can't know what everybody is doing every day now. I have to rely on processes being in place to get the job done. And that's what's going to propel us from, you know, the company that we were a few years ago to the company that we want to be decades from now.
Got it. Okay. I think it's a very powerful thing, and it's definitely a characteristic or a consequence of growth. When it's three people, you can know what Charlie, Joe, and Sam are doing. When it's 30 people, not so much. You got to count on the fact that they're all trained to the best process we can identify, and they're continuously improving that process, right? Okay. So Steve, Kevin, Bill, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your perspectives, insights, and expertise with me and our listeners.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And to our listeners. Thank you for joining us for this conversation with Steve Lamb, Kevin Thorne, Bill Breger, and Denise Shields on the Small and Medium-Sized Manufacturer's Perspective on the Baldrige Award. Thank you for listening to Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and post it on your social media platforms. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast directory. For more information on our topic, please visit www.cmtc.com/shiftinggears. CMTC is a private nonprofit organization that provides technical assistance, workforce development, and consulting services to small and medium-sized manufacturers throughout the state of California. CMTC's mission is to serve as a trusted advisor, providing solutions that increase the productivity and competitiveness of California's manufacturers. CMTC operates under a cooperative agreement for the state of California with the Hollings Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program, MEP, at the National Institutes of Standards and Technology within the Department of Commerce. For more information about CMTC, please visit www.cmtc.com. For more information about the MEP National Network, or to find your local MEP center, visit www.nist.gov/MEP.